Hello, and welcome to the Modern Maker podcast for Thursday, April 25th, otherwise known as not even National, but World Penguin Day. A day where the whole world can get on board with that, not just America.
The originators of the tuxedo.
That's right. At least the natural tuxedo.
Yeah, all natural tuxedo. The waterproof tuxedo.
Yep. Gotta have one.
All right. Penguins are cute, but they kind of smell bad.
I haven't smelled one, I don't think.
In their feathers or fur that, yeah, they smell like fish oil.
Can't confirm the smell.
Also, all they do is eat. They also only eat fish.
That's true.
So that probably doesn't help either.
I bet you they would try bacon if you gave it to them.
I saw a really great YouTube video.
Then they'd smell nice.
Of a family in Japan that had a pet penguin, and they put a backpack on it, which is adorable. And then the penguin would walk from their house into town and would go to the fish market. And the guy at the fish market would feed the penguin one fish and then put another fish in the backpack for later. And then it would walk back home. And it did that every day.
Wow.
Was the other fish also for it to eat later?
Yes.
So he didn't bring anything for its humans.
Yeah, they also have a really interesting way of eating where they tilt their head so that their beak faces completely straight up.
Yeah.
So their neck aligns so a whole fish just slides right down. It's just great that they evolve certain postures to avoid chewing.
Yeah, it's just a straight fish funnel. But before we move on, I feel like we need to touch on the fact that he didn't do anything for his humans.
Yeah.
He just went and got a fish for now and a fish for later, but nothing
for
his homeboys.
To what end? I guess just because it's cute for the TV show?
If you have an adorable pet that feeds itself, that is doing something for you.
That's true. Especially if you can make it into a viral internet video.
It's also brightening up the spirits of the community.
Yeah, there we go. Well, shout out to penguins, man.
They've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, especially penguins in backpacks.
Yeah. All right. So we've got to make a quick apology for no episode last week. Ben and I, we were traveling, or at least I was traveling. Wasn't Ben there too? I was about to say, because we were in Atlanta. I'm sorry. At first, I thought we were talking about the Old Pal bus, which we'll be talking about in a minute. But what we missed the podcast for was the Home Depot Perspective event in Atlanta, which was a really good time. It was a few days. It was hosted at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium where the Falcons play. And I've got to say, we got a tour of that stadium. We got to go into their locker room. We got to go down to field level through the tunnel that they walk out through to go out to the games and see the 360 Jumbotron that they've got.
Was Malecki having flashbacks?
I wish I was in his group. I wasn't in the same group as him, but I have to imagine he was out there ready to like strap up, throw on the shoulder pads, and just like run out there and hit somebody. But it was a great event. We got to see a ton of tools from basically all of Home Depot's major vendors, see all of their things that they're releasing for 2019, whether that's for the majority of power tool brands, their new batteries, which seem to all have more power than everyone else.
Everybody's
got the strongest battery with the most runtime. But it was really fun. What kind of stuck out to you, Ben, while we were there?
The most interesting thing to me is how these companies are thinking of themselves, is that they're starting to think of themselves as battery companies. And I think that's really smart. Ryobi, for example, has 70 million batteries in circulation in the U.S. And so when you think about what that creates an opportunity not just for tools, but for all sorts of, you know, gadgets, electronic devices. The thing that that I really was excited about was they created a Dremel tool as a generic name? I always just think of Dremels as Dremels, right? But they basically created a Dremel alternative where the flexible shaft isn't an accessory, it's actually built into it. So it's a little base station, and then it has this small pen-sized rotary tool that could use Dremel-type attachments. And I tried it. It's fantastic. So the normal Ryobi battery plugs into the base station, and then you have this really lightweight thing that you can hold just like a pen or pencil.
Yeah,
that was really cool. But the single thing that I thought was the most overdue, I mean, obviously I have a ton of Ryobi batteries. I've been with them for a long time. They created just a socket that fits on the end of a battery that allows you to plug in a USB or your laptop. So you can basically I always thought it was so silly that I have all these Ryobi batteries, but then I have a separate battery that I put in my backpack to charge my phone when I'm traveling or a laptop when I'm stuff like that. Now yeah. I can just take one of my Ryobi batteries, put this adapter on it, and I'm good to go. And those batteries are actually way better than those ones that you get at like an airport mall or something.
Yeah, Ryobi seems to be doing a pretty smart move because there's other brands out there, whether it's Makita or Milwaukee, those industry brands that have the incredibly heavy duty batteries. So they're the ones that are either 60 volt or 40 volt, and they've got a really high amp hour. And so those things power outdoor equipment really, really well. So if you strap those into a chainsaw, that thing's going to have so much torque compared to an 18 volt Ryobi platform. But what Ryobi has done, like you mentioned so well, is it seems like they've got more tools, but also more accessories and non-traditional tools that fit on their platform than anybody else. And I think that's a really strong move. I was at their booth and I saw the same thing, and it had me scratching my head. What else could you fit on an 18 volt platform that Ryobi is kind of not already doing already?
Do you yes. think that the reason that every company has like a different proprietary battery in terms of like the way that it fits, do you think it's as a business decision, or do you think it's because like they want to ensure that their tools perform a certain way so that you're only using their battery on their tool? Like, well, do you think we'll ever see one where two companies are like, you know what? Screw this. We're going to make it where the batteries can go in between our two tools.
It's both. But if I was Harbor Freight, I would create a drill adapter that works with any battery.
Right, right. Yeah. Because Harbor Freight already doesn't even have brand loyalty to the brands it carries. Like, it switches over so fast all the time anyways. You're 100% right.
Well, imagine like if every drill had like a different shaped chuck, or like every circular saw you needed a different arbor size, yeah, or, you know, hole in your saw to use it or whatever. That'd be crazy. I'm just thinking of like other things in other realms where it's similar. So like cameras would be something that's similar, where every camera company lens has a different mount. Yeah, the way that their lenses mount. Although they make adapters that you can use. And then actually, so like my camera, the Panasonic GH5, is Micro Four Thirds. So any Micro Four Thirds camera is an open system. So like Olympus also makes Micro Four Thirds, and like Blackmagic. And all of those lenses are interchangeable. So it has happened.
Yeah, let's say jigsaw blades are an example where they've kind of, like the T-Shank ones are pretty universal. They work on a lot of different brands of jigsaw. With yeah. reciprocating saw blades, I think those are pretty universal as well. So there are a lot of things where they do make it work. But I guess it would be for performance issues to everyone has a little bit different motors that are optimized for different batteries. So it right. probably would be a little bit different. The other thing that I thought really stood out to me was the Diablo demonstration. They were cutting, I think it was like 3-inch by 2-inch tube steel with a 1/4-inch thick wall with a regular circular saw.
Oh, wow.
And they put I think it was a 7 1/4-inch diameter circular saw. It's either 7 1/4 or 6 1/2. And the ceramic technology for blades has gotten so much better that they can make these blades that cut steel cold. And the demo was, he was just using a handheld normal circular saw. He cut through this pretty hefty section of tube steel. And then as a demo, he held the tube steel that he just cut to his face to show that it cut cool. It wasn't all hot the way an abrasive blade gets. And that was pretty mind-blowing. The fact that you can cut steel like that just because blade technology has gotten that much better. And, you know, the Evolution saw has been around for a while, but that's kind of geared differently than a typical miter saw that's meant for wood. So seeing that come along was pretty mind-blowing to me.
Yeah. The other fun part of this event was there was all of the Home Depot outdoor vendors. So everybody that makes riding lawn mowers, all the Troy Builds, all the Husqvarna, or not Husqvarna, but a lot of the other outdoor brands. And so there was all of these tool companies that had zero-turn mowers out for people to use and demo. And then we have a bunch of bloggers and YouTubers and Instagrammers out there that have never ridden one before. Mm-hmm. And they've got this kind of cone set up for people to test them out. And holy cow, the amount of people that I almost saw completely wipe out was insane. These poor cones got ran over like 1,000 times by people, but it.
Yes.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And it was also funny seeing all these ways that brands are demonstrating the quality of their product. So I'm going to go back to Troy Bilt, who makes a lot of mowers. So whether they're push mowers or classic riding mowers, they've got all of these demonstrations to show how durable they are. So they've got one that makes sense. It's the pull start test. So they can strap a mower into this machine and then test, you know, pulling the cord 1,000 times to make sure every time it starts. Mm-hmm. Solid test. Totally makes sense. Test number two was one of their tractor mowers on top of a thing where each wheel was sitting on an actuator that basically pushed up and down. It was like a whack-a-mole that this tractor was sitting on. So it basically simulated driving on a rough environment. So it would kind of make sure the suspension was doing well and that the deck that the blade sat on was still staying flat. Mm-hmm. Then the third one was just a drop test where they would lift just a normal old push mower up about 4 feet and then just let it free fall to the ground. Yeah. And I'm sitting there thinking, exactly, for all the times that your mowers take a 4 feet drop when you're casually using it in your backyard.
I guess if that's how, every time I use my mower, I like to put it in the back of my truck and then just kick it out.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that's the one practical situation where that would happen. But it made me think of, between that and all the other ways people were demonstrating their products, how some of them seemed spot on, like perfect. Right. That's how people are using it. That's the abuse that it's going to take. And then sometimes it's like the furthest left field thing.
Yeah, I could see maybe like where it has to drop like 6 inches or something because you're pulling it totally out of your shed or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure people do that.
Well, if it can make it 4 feet, it should make it 6 inches fine.
Oh, no, that'll destroy it. It's only designed to take a 4 foot drop.
Only at terminal velocity.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Designing a demonstration to show improved performance is a pretty interesting challenge.
Totally.
So another one that I saw that was interesting but didn't really speak to me for how I use tools was a side-by-side comparison of impact drivers. Mm-hmm, so Rigid had their impact driver, and it was set up on a plexiglass box, and that had the impact driver was on a nut that was on threaded rod. And then there was, I think, 3 25-pound weight plates. And so when you pull the trigger on the impact driver, it turns the threaded rod and lifts up 75 pounds.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And it's a race, and it's side-by-side with a Lowe's Cobalt brand impact driver. And you can test them. You can pull the triggers on both of them and see which one goes up faster. And the Rigid one, I mean, they set up the test, so obviously it is like 3 times faster. That was cool as a demo, as sort of a science fair kind of thing. But I've never had any impact driver not be strong enough for what I'm doing, because we're often driving things into wood. We're not trying to get rusted lug nuts off of a semi-truck. So there's things like that which are visually compelling, but I also feel about that like the way I feel about like truck commercials where they're talking to me about towing capacity. I wasn't planning on towing a yacht, so I'm more interested in whether or not I can fit plywood into the bed.
Right.
And so I think a really interesting thing would be, and maybe this could be a good question for audience submissions, and not so much questions, but just ideas, is what sort of tool demos are important to you? Like, I've seen people, the Festool sander, I've seen that speak to a lot of people when the minute you take your hand off the button, it stops, right? You know, whereas like the Ryobi one, you have to keep waiting for it to, it keeps moving after you turn off the power.
Oh, like it spins down quicker?
So you have to hold it until you can set it down. Yeah, it only ends up being like 5 to 10 seconds, but little things like that to me often speak, or people get more excited about those details than they do these sort of high-end power numbers, because most of our tools are powerful enough already.
Right.
Sometimes we push the limits to it, but yeah, I would be interested in listeners sort of submitting their ideas of what are the sort of critical things that push them over the top for being really loyal to a particular tool, or they get really excited about a feature.
Yeah, I remember that demo, and I remember a couple of other drill and impact driver demos, and everyone was pushing speed, not so much power. It seemed like speed, but I was kind of laughing at the same thing, thinking, looking back every time I've built projects, I've never been driving screws, just like 1.5 or 2.5 inch wood screws, thinking, I need this to go faster. Usually I'm going too fast and I'm right. like burying screws too deep anyways.
Yeah, but, I was going to say the first thing that popped into my head of like what feature I would really like to see in something like an impact driver. So it'd be if you could make it like smaller where you can fit it into tighter spaces is something that would be like an upsell, or actually just like the amount that you can, I don't know if the right word would be like actuate the speed. Right. So like how variable or like how easy it is to regulate going at a slower speed. And cause I'm often doing that where like, you know, you might drive the first part of it really fast, but then for the very end, like you don't want to bury it too deep, but you want to make sure it's below the surface. So like you want to get it just dialed in right. So being able to actuate the speed really easily would be an upsell for me.
Yeah, that's something that I always thought is funny as well, because a typical drill has on the chuck, you turn it and you basically, it has a thing that doesn't let you overdrive things.
Right.
So that if you start torquing it too much, then it just quits turning. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised that an impact driver doesn't have something similar, even if it were like a three-way switch or something like that, that either controlled speed or torque, one of the other, that didn't let you over torque things. But yeah.
I know that there are, so like, obviously you can regulate the speed with like how much you squeeze the trigger or whatever.
Right.
But then
right.
On the Hikoki ones, there's actually like a button on the side that you can press that'll put it into different modes for like how fast like the max speed will be. So nice. There are some sort of little things like that, I know.
Oh, I thought of another one. So the term game changer is used way too much, first of all.
Right.
Like, brands should not say it's a game changer just because they did a 15 to 20% power or runtime improvement yeah. since the previous model. That's not a game changer. That's a fantastic incremental improvement that's inevitable. To me, the game changers are a nail gun that doesn't hook to an air compressor because the compressor is on board. And then when the first gen or going from a quartered circular saw to a battery circular saw. But then that's where I think performance becomes really interesting to me, because the minute you break away from the platform, the technology is the most vulnerable because it's new. So it probably isn't that great yet. The first generation, completely cordless, no air compressor nailers weren't great, but now they're really good. I saw R&R builders showing them and saying like, wow, no, I can do everything I need with this. I don't really need the compressor. I've used them. They're fantastic. And not having to hook up and drag that air compressor around and have this giant hose, which is also a more vulnerable kind of hose than a typical cord or anything like that, is to me, that's a game changer. And then the incremental improvements are, will this be a game that I want to play? Are become really important. So I do care about performance, but I normally care about it just getting up to the point where there's a big platform shift, but then making that new platform viable.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And I would say one last thing about the Home Depot event that I wanted to shout out. And it's a brand that I've been, I would say, routinely impressed with, and it's Husky, which I think is Home Depot's house brand. I think that's their in-house kind of mechanics and workshop line. Mm-hmm. And one, they've done kind of an upgrade to their storage. So similar to the rolling tool chest that you have, Chris,
right,
where
there.
You're able to store all of your, you know, all your miscellaneous, so all your pull saws, all your measuring tools, you're able to store those away really well. They've kind of improved those a bit. And that's something that whenever we get into a good full-size shop, that's going to be something that I integrate into my workflow immediately, because it just cleans up the space so fast.
Yeah.
The other thing that they've come out with, and this is directly to compete with Craftsman, since Craftsman is now a Lowe's brand, is they've developed a new ratchet that turns with only, I think, a 16th inch clearance. So if the handle can move a 16th of an inch, then it can ratchet. It has enough space that it can click back one time. And so they had a really cool demo showing all of that off, but I was just really impressed.
They crushed the Craftsman ratchet.
They did, man. I've really got to say, they really seemed to take it to Craftsman a little bit, at least in the demos that they thought up and made to show off their own products, right?
Yes.
I'm sure Craftsman could come up with some really good demos too. But I was really, really impressed with Husky at large.
Oh,
I'd love to get the opportunity to do some stuff with them.
You're forgetting the game changer that they did.
Uh-oh.
What was that? What did I miss?
They made a folding speed square.
Oh yeah,
that's true. That is the one. I was reluctant to be excited about that because it was so cool that I almost got jealous by how cool it was. It was such a great idea. Did you guys get hands on with it?
Yes,
a little bit. Yeah. Why don't you take it away, Ben?
So they made an 8-inch speed square, which is a tool that I use almost every day I'm in the shop.
Yeah, it was a 6-inch speed square, but same.
Okay, but they made it have a fold out arm so that not the side that has the ledge that grips onto the material, but the other side, the measuring edge, has a fold-out arm that goes to 12 inches.
Yeah.
The side you would mark with.
Right.
The side you'd put your pencil against.
So it's adjustable so you don't have to carry around this big 12-inch square. So they were sort of thinking of it more for people on a job site, up on a ladder. You can have a 6 or 8-inch speed square hooked to your belt. And then if you do need to sort of guide something for longer or measure something longer, it flips out to do that. But it also still works in its folded up position as well.
So is it robust enough that like you would feel confident using it with a circular saw?
Yes.
As a guide?
The downside is that they had to make the main triangle part a little bit thicker. So it looks like it's about the aluminum on that part. Right now I have like the Empire ones from Home Depot. And I would say the aluminum on those is about 3/16 of an inch thick. This looks like it might be a little bit closer to 1/4 of an inch thick. So on the downside, if there's no bevel or taper on that, then the mark that you're marking is farther away from only 1/16 of an inch, but it's farther away from the surface of the wood that you're marking on.
Yeah.
What was interesting is I was talking to the guys at Husky. And I was saying, like, do you guys look at like, you know, Woodpecker and stuff like that to see a company that puts out a lot of ideas? They're like, no, what's that? they had never heard of it. And the people think that the product development teams for these big companies are huge, but they're not. It might just be like a few people, like three or four. So they're really more acquiring ideas that they see out there. And then they're sort of like buying or licensing intellectual property to kind of do that. But they don't have this big lab of engineers and scientists sort of inventing stuff. There'd be too much overhead.
It was interesting. Even talking to the ladder company, there was Gorilla Ladders there and then Warner Ladders. And both of them have their unique products that they're all doing. But it seems like everybody's just kind of, to speak on what you were saying, is everyone's got a relatively small R&D team. And they're just finding small upsides that already exist in their product lines and then just trying their best to accentuate that. So the Warner Ladder Company, they had really good just classic step ladders. So just like 3 or 4 step short ladders. And they also carried, you know, every other ladder under the sun. But a lot of people really liked having those step stools, like what you would have in a kitchen compared to a ladder if they're doing something short. And so they just had the idea of it, instead of small steps, doing those big platform steps, but doing it on a full-size ladder. And it was just that small idea of incorporating what they already have in one product line and then taking that to a different one. And it seems like that's what a lot of people are doing whenever they're doing this sort of thing. Most of the brands are just finding a small selling point that already exists and then taking that and adopting it into as many products that they already have, if that makes sense.
Did you go up to, I forgot the two names, did you go up to Wagner Ladder and say, hey, how about that Gorilla Ladder? And they're like, who?
Yeah, well, that was the funny part is they also stuck their booths directly opposite each other, so they just had to look at each
just
other all day,
just staring at each
too.
Other the whole time?
Yeah.
It's a ladder war.
People have to stop using Gorilla as their branding. Like,
there's a lot of Gorilla.
There was Gorilla Grip Gloves.
Gorilla Glue. Yep.
There was Gorilla Ladders, and then Gorilla Glue.
Glue the first? I feel like they were the first that I was aware of, at least.
Same.
Yeah, we're going to side with Gorilla Glue.
They cornered the market on the... Oh, and I have the Gorilla Gripper. That's that thing that I carry the plywood
with. Oh, I got one of those too. Those are fantastic.
Yeah, but again...
Another independent company as well.
I guess because you just think of gorillas as like the strongest thing with opposable thumbs. So, like, if you're really going to grip something, you go gorilla.
You know what there also is, though? There's gator gripped kind of stuff, too. I see that.
Yeah, true.
Because they have powerful jaws. It's just when you're thinking of something as
and the alliteration.
Versus, you know, biting something.
Yeah, ladders, I do not think of a gorilla.
Yeah,
but gorillas climb. And gorillas climb?
But I think they live on the ground.
They definitely live on the ground.
Oh, so they would need ladders. You see, so you've got chimps and you've got orangutans. They don't need ladders. Gorillas need ladders.
How are you going to get those bananas up top? Get a ladder.
Yeah. So I just Googled who has the strongest bite in the animal kingdom. Number one, we have grizzly.
Okay.
Which grizzly gets a lot of love in branding as well between grizzly tools. But no one's doing any kind of grizzly grip, though. No one's really taking advantage of that.
Because they kind of have, they don't. Do they have thumbs?
No.
They can grab stuff, though.
They have paws. Yeah, they got claws.
Yes, but the way I think of it, grizzly, they're just using that as like the power. That's like a power brand.
Yeah, it's powerful.
Yeah, exactly. And then beneath grizzly bears, we've got the bull shark. Yeah.
Well, I think the brands
shark
like
screwdrivers.
I think the brands like grizzly because it's a powerful animal that isn't too exotic and appeals more to like our American customers.
It's a real blue collar animal.
Yeah, very totally, grizzly bear. Very North American.
Right.
I'd like to see more eagles worked into tool branding.
I feel like that would be laser companies. If you make a laser, like
yeah, you gotta get that eagle eye,
eagle, right?
Accuracy, or some kind of precision. Eye protection or something.
Okay, so I'm happy that we were able to run through those animals, but we do need to do one more, only because we've got to pay respects to the animal with the strongest bite in the animal kingdom. So in second place, we have the saltwater croc with a PSI of 7,700. That's its bite.
Wait,
force.
What are you reading from?
Let's just say I watched a Steve Irwin episode last night.
Oh, you're
and
just
I
talking
wrote
about like, biting
down.
Power?
No. Yeah, I just Googled who has the strongest bite in the animal kingdom.
Uh-huh.
So saltwater croc comes in at number two.
Dang.
And it's 7,000-something PSI. Really impressive. You know, it's a dinosaur. What could you expect?
Oh, I know it.
But capitalizing on number one, do you want to guess, Chris?
Hippo.
No, very close. It's on the list.
Dang.
But number one is the orca with 19,000 PSI. Yep.
Dang.
The killer whale.
Now, what about this? I think that somebody should work if a certain tool that like you're going to have on you all the time that's going to be maybe your best friend.
Oh.
I think they should work some more like the golden retriever something. I don't know.
Ooh, yeah.
Work dogs into that, Brandon.
Yeah, the golden retriever, though, is... I don't know, man. It's loyal. Yeah. There
puppy
you go.
Tools.
That's why Diablo just said, you know what? We're like too much for the animal kingdom.
Too hardcore.
We're just going straight to hell. And our mascot is the devil.
Somebody should make Jesus blades.
But we'll Jesus make it in blades. A, we'll make it in another language.
Yeah.
Because Satan saw blades would sound too rough. Yeah.
Have you guys tried these new Lucifer screwdriving bits? They're great.
Yeah. Yeah.
King of Darkness. Yeah. All right. Now what are you guys working on?
Well, all Mike right, and I renovated a bus.
But not Mike's bus. A different bus.
But not the bus that I've been talking about for the past year.
Yes. We did a warm-up bus. It's considerably shorter than Mike's bus. So... a company called Old Pal, which is a cannabis company. They're kind of being like they're trying to be like the PBR of cannabis, I'd say is what their sort of brand is.
The hipsters.
They reached out to us and we've been talking to them about doing some content. And they leased this bus from a famous surfboard maker that's actually from Santa Barbara. So Ryan Lovelace is a old school hand shaper. And make surfboards, you know, where they get the foam, they shave it down by hand. I don't know how they get it perfectly uniform. They must have like templates or something. And then they like coat it with epoxy and fiberglass. It, you know, they're their original river tables. And they leased this bus from him because he had this Franken bus, which was like a whole thing, I think, in the 60s and 70s, where they would take like a school bus and then they would take a like Volkswagen van, cut the Volkswagen van in half from the top up and then attach that to the top of the bus so that the bus had extra headroom so you could really stand up. And then also all the windows in the Volkswagen van would bring all this light. So it makes it, it almost feels like you're in a traveling greenhouse. It's pretty cool. It feels spacious and airy. And then he also built on this little sleeper loft onto the back. So this thing had been parked for a while. Old pal hired this awesome mechanic, Gabe, to fix it up. And so he put in a whole new engine, got it running, had to basically fabricate an emergency brake, rebuild out the chassis to hold the new engine, did a ton of work. And then it came over to us, and it was there was some mold in it, a lot of decay. It hadn't really been used in, seemed like, decades.
Yeah, all the kind of weather sealing had served its life, and so it was pretty dusty, and a lot of weather had gotten in, for sure.
Right, it wasn't weathertight.
Not
so
anymore, no.
We had to do about a 4-day renovation, and luckily the aesthetic that they wanted was to look very vintage and weathered, so that was great, meaning that we didn't have to do a lot of paint or make everything look new. But it was challenging because we had to build out new benches and seating and upholstery and shelving for their merchandise and stuff as they go to Coachella, and making sure that the stuff we were building didn't look too new and out of place was actually the challenge. So it was totally different than what we normally do, which is trying to take raw materials and make it look pristine. We were trying to take raw materials, integrate it into something with no straight lines, and still have it match the overall kind of vintage feel of it.
Yeah.
And we had to work with a lot of different materials. There was parts of the bus where the frame of the bus's ceiling was poking through this like 1/8-inch thick aluminum because the rivets had all rusted out. And there's this jagged steel bar is kind of poking out. And we had to use 1/8-inch plywood to kind of patch that up. And then we had to figure out a surface material that would blend between the aluminum and that plywood, which we just added. And my sister Jessie came up with this idea of using canvas, and she cut it with those crisscross cut scissors, the kind of waffle scissors.
Yeah.
And made a whole bunch of patches, and then like laminated those in like a really cool patchwork pattern that was new, but it looked vintage.
Yeah, I was really impressed with that. And she, what was it that she used? It was called like fabric. Was it called fabric glue or was it something else?
I think it's like fabric fusion glue.
Fusion, that's
so
it.
So what
yeah.
she did was she used a Gorilla spray adhesive. Shout out to one of our many Gorilla brands.
Animals.
Yep.
She sprayed adhesive to get the stuff to stick. And then she put this fabric fusion glue over the top and then used a putty knife to kind of almost like decoupage it, but with fabric.
Yeah.
And that kind of also preserved and sealed it.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot cooler of a, what do you call that, a headliner than whatever we would have come up with. So shout out to Jesse on that one. So yeah, let's just chat about like the individual projects that we did in there. The majority of my first day, I spent doing a deck off of the back of the bus. I did that. And then the majority of the rest of the time, I spent either doing kind of miscellaneous shelf building or weatherproofing. So replacing windows and then replacing a lot of the old caulk seams that needed to be torn out and then re-ran. But you spent a lot of time working with cedar, and this project was a real testament, I think, to the versatility of cedar, because it looks really great whenever you... So we have a lot of cedar 2x4s, 2x6s, 2x8s that the Western Red Cedar Association, shout out to them, were nice enough to send out to us. And lately, you've been doing quite a bit of projects with them where you take off the rounded corner like we do with 2x4s all the time, and then, you know, sand them, clean them up, use them like normal wood. But those look really great when they're cleaned up. But that cedar also looked really awesome paired with that vintage aesthetic that we were looking for whenever we threw that simple finish on too.
Yeah, I've whitewashed it to make that table recently. And
oh,
it looked incredibly modern and sleek and streamlined. And then for this one, we used simple finish and it looked rustic and warm and homey.
Yeah, totally.
But I mean, hardwoods get all the love and are seen as the premium things. But man, like a nice softwood is like so easy to work with. The ability to cut, shape, round off a corner real quick to make something fit in a curved environment was pretty fantastic. The things I worked on, you know, I built out a lot of shelves and benches, and they had this floor. The floor was incredible. It was a plywood floor, and they did like this stencil where they did translucent stains, one orange and one brown, and they overlapped the stencil to create this really intricate pattern on the floor. It's like very 60s or 70s, but it's actually a kind of thing that like is definitely would be popular now.
Yep.
That was really cool, but the edges of it were plywood and it was raw and water had gotten into it. So those were all rippled up and moldy. So I had to kind of like, and you know, all flaked away. So I had to build like a new threshold that kind of covered that, removed the rotted material, and then create a transition. So I had to get I went in our scrap bin and got a whole bunch of different kinds, oak, maple, pine, ipe. And I cut these strips to kind of make it so it was so the different colors of wood would sort of match the different kinds of paint on the flooring. So that was fun. There was they took out a wood stove out of this, which I think is also good because, you know, I'd always worry about like, you know, dying of asphyxiation if you had like a wood stove in a bus. Now, thankfully, the bus isn't that sealed, but
yeah.
So we had this giant 5 to 6 inch diameter hole through the roof where a stove pipe went through. So I had to figure out a way to patch that. And luckily, I had just done the shipping container and knew all these tapes and Henry seals, which is like a spray silicone seal for sealing roof seams to do that. But what I did was I took one at Harbor Freight. I got this, you know, how like for Home and Garden, they have all these little solar panels on a stick that you can stick right into the ground. And it has a little light built into it.
Yeah.
Well, they had one where it was that little solar panel on a stick. But there, instead of a light in it, like a lantern, it had a LED strip come out of it. So I took that and I put that stick through a piece of flashing for like a vent, which took the 6-inch diameter hole down to a 1-inch diameter hole. And then I put that little solar powered stick in there. So I have a solar panel that's covering up the hole now. And then I ran that LED light and put it inside an old rusted steel Moroccan lantern. So now we basically took this really medieval looking lantern, but upgraded it with a solar powered LED lights. So all to patch the hole. So there's a lot of little details like that. We will be doing a video for it. I don't know if the video is going on one of our channels or going on the Old Pal channel, but stay tuned. We'll have a lot of content. And oh, I got to test out the GoPro Fusion 360 camera, which was pretty cool. So I'm just looking at the footage now, and yeah, that technology is pretty incredible.
So then I'm guessing while you guys were doing this bus renovation, like was a lot of the stuff that you had to do, like you couldn't really pre-plan it. It's just like, we got to see the bus and kind of figure it out on the fly.
It was all on the fly.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what it seemed like. That's why I was actually going to ask, did you guys film it and are you making videos? But
yeah, it was a three-dimensional in real time Pictionary kind of thing. It was a crash course where, I mean, those things are tricky, and it's also difficult to work in a group environment in those kind of settings where there isn't a set plan. So it's hard to delegate.
Right.
And it's really easy to get too zoned in on the one thing that you're working on and spend too much time doing it. So we knew the bus was supposed to get there like a week earlier. So our timeline got really compressed. Mm-hmm. So the challenge was to actually pull back and not get too focused on the one thing ahead of you when there's so many individual tasks to do.
Right.
And also not getting too involved with the one thing you're working on, knowing that you've got 12 other things to get to that same day. But you did a great job being project manager, I guess is the right word, in terms of making sure everybody kind of, one, you know, had whatever they were doing currently, but also had a good idea of what to do next. Cause I basically kind of looked at you the first day and was just like, I'm Hans, just tell me what to do. So like you gave me a project, I did that. And then like, as I was wrapping on that, you're like, hey, whenever you get done with the deck, if you don't mind like getting the windows replaced up in the loft, I was like, all right, cool. Just keep me with things to do. And you did a good job with that. So
that's a two-way street because either one of us can, it's nice to work in a situation where there's no hierarchy, where no one person is the boss. But the downside of that can be is that there's no definitive direction. Mm. And work can overlap and be contradictory.
Yeah.
What's nice is when there's no ego in the work. There's pride in the work, but no ego. Where nobody's offended if it's someone else's idea. It's just we all benefit from getting this done. We all realize that good communication and our ideas aren't as important as just getting this done in a unreasonable amount of time. So yeah. it was a nice working situation, and it turned out I thought we were going to be pulling an all-nighter on the last night, to be honest, but we actually finished it. And, you know, we worked 12 to 14 hour days, but we weren't working, you know, those 16 to 18 hour days, which are the ones that are kind of miserable.
Yeah, they were just like casually long, hard days. They weren't like no day was tough, particularly. They were just like good, solid days. But that same idea even translates to at the Home Depot event, to rewind a little bit. One of the stations that they had us kind of hanging out at was a picnic building station.
Oh, yeah.
And Ben, you were in a separate group than we were. They basically split us up into two big groups. And then within those big groups, they would split us off for different activities even further. And so one of the things they had us doing was taking a bunch of lumber, like the wettest 2x6s I've ever used in my life. These things were so heavy.
Dripping.
They took these like 45-pound 2x6s, and we were building picnic tables out of them. And it was the exact same thing to what we were talking to. They basically told us to split up into groups of five. And so, you know, it just so happened that I was kind of standing with Brad Rodriguez, John Malecki, Mike Clifford from Industrial Maker, and then Johnny Builds. And we all kind of just immediately gravitated to our group of five. And then there was a couple of other groups. And the first thing I did when they handed us our instruction sheet was literally just be like, Brad, here you go. Brad from Fix This, Build That. Because first off, he's the plan guy. So if there's anybody that can make great plans, it's him. So he should be able to read them too.
Yep.
And so that was like the first thing was like, all right, get one person that is literally just project managing. He doesn't need to be cutting anything. He just needs to make sure that everything is just being done the right way and that everyone's busy. And
you guys win?
We
was it a competition?
Not only it was. I mean, it wasn't designed to be a competition.
It wasn't officially, but you guys made it one?
I was about to say, but I was there, so it immediately turned into a competition as soon as it got split up into teams.
Yeah.
And so it went really well, though, because they're going to end up, I think, donating those to a charity that Home Depot works with that's local. So that's great, because they got, I think, like six or eight picnic tables out of the whole thing. So that was really, really awesome.
Picnic tables for kids.
Yeah, so Brad was out there. He had the plans. He was telling everybody. He was telling who to cut what. And the whole time that I'm also cutting, I'm looking at the other groups, and I keep giving updates on, like, there was a group of basically all the girls, you know. It was kind of like a guys versus girls thing because that's what happens. And I was sitting there, I was like, the girls just got their benches done. We got to hurry, boys, because at that time we're working on our stretchers, getting a couple things done, and they started catching up to us. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. Either way, the prospective event was great. Building the bus was great. It's been a lot of fun lately. It's been really busy.
Nice.
Chris, what have you been building?
So, let's see. I put out my video that I was talking about for the past couple weeks, which turned out to be a 30-minute long video, Mike.
All right. And I'm only saying this now so I don't cut you off later.
Okay.
I watched it. It was a great video, and the pacing on it was good because you went into so much detail, and I know you're about to talk about it in a second.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it until like 3 or 4 days after it went live, though. I really had to find the time where I was like, all right, I got a half hour to really chill out and watch this thing before bed.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that a lot of people, and speculating that a lot of people may be doing that same thing. Because after I put it out, I was like, man, is 30 minutes too long? But like, there were some like slow parts here or whatever where I could cut 2 minutes from it or whatever if I tightened up this, but I don't know how much that really helps. But like, yeah, it was chock full of information. So it didn't feel like I was purposefully being long on stuff. It just like had a kind of drawn out pace. I was going into more detail. I'm really happy with it regardless of how it ends up performing long term. Like, it was a fun project to make. I think it's like one of my better videos that I've made. So
your analogy at the end was golden too, talking about
spaghetti and cheeseburgers.
Spaghetti and burgers. Yeah.
I always get to that point and I'm like, what the hell am I going to say? Like,
Yeah.
I don't know what to especially say. That's why I just go off on a tangent.
Especially with that one, because you wrote a 30-minute script, basically.
I had to tie it up.
Like, that was probably quite a bit longer than what you normally do, too. So you're probably a little, little out there.
Yeah, for sure. Now I'm building a project that's very much the opposite of that. It's a very quick project. So me and Mike Clifford from Industrial Maker and Rag and Bone Brown is another channel. So the three of us all work with Hikoki. And so we're doing it's not really a collaboration. It's just kind of like a timed video release, I guess you'd call it, where we're doing a limited tools build. So we got to discuss and come up with what we wanted to use, and we settled on using circular saws, drills, and random orbit sanders. We just wanted to try to keep it to like three tools for whatever reason. And we're all doing our own individual projects, and they should be out by the time that you're listening to this. So I decided to do a bookcase, and kind of like a large bookcase. It came out to be about like 3 feet tall and like 6 feet wide, probably, maybe a little bit longer than that.
Nice.
And it's very simple. Like I very much am trying to keep it to like anybody can build this type of thing. You know, you don't need to have a bunch of tools, obviously. I just really think that anybody could build this thing. It's very simple, very straightforward, but still like very clean looking and like a somewhat, I don't know if unique's the right word, but like doesn't look like something you would just go to Target and buy or something like that. So it doesn't look off the shelf, I guess that's a good way to put it.
Right.
Yeah. And so in the video, it's obviously going to be a lot quicker and a lot shorter, but I'm still trying to go into detail just to show like, here is one way you can do it. Here's a better way you can do it. And trying to stress that even with limited tools, and if you're like a beginner or whatever, you can still get a clean result. And that most of that comes from just paying attention to like these extra little things when you're like, you know, if you were going to show a bunch of screws or something, like marking where the screws are going to go so that they're shown in an organized fashion, they can look really nice.
Right.
As opposed to like, if you're just like, yeah, just put them wherever, it's going to look kind of wonky when you look at it. So I'm trying to stress those sorts of details in the build.
I like that a lot. Yeah, that's what using the pocket hole drill bit. That was kind of one of the revelations I had whenever I started doing that was the way I put things together a lot of times is exactly what you're saying is I try and measure where my screws go, but I still screw from the outside and make butt joints whenever I'm doing a lot of casework. And I do that all the time. I don't really have a problem with it. I think it looks fine. But whenever I realized that you could use that pocket hole drill bit to recess the screws and then put a plug behind it, like a 3/8-inch dowel to cover the screw head, that was one of those moments where it didn't take any extra tools other than that one little drill bit, even though you don't really need a specialty drill bit. You could just use two individual drill bits. Mm-hmm. But it was that thing where finding those little loopholes where it doesn't take an extra tool, it maybe just takes a little extra time or a little bit more attention.
Right.
That's a killer move. When it comes to a bookcase, one thing I would think of is maybe some way of doing adjustable shelves. So maybe making it to where you drill a bunch of holes to where you could put those little shelf pins in at different places or something.
Yeah, I didn't do that. So this one is much more long and low than tall and vertical. So it's basically like four long shelves with vertical partitions. And those you could technically adjust. They're just screwed in, so you could put them wherever you wanted. But it's kind of like big enough that, and that's the other thing is I wanted to make it very much where like, here's the idea. You can scale it however you want. Cause for a lot of people, this might be way too big, or you might want to make a vertical version of it, which you could easily do. But to go back to what you were saying, Mike, about just like, I think that's the key thing that I hope that people take away from it is just like, if you spend, you could do this in 3 hours or you could do it in 5 hours. And if you spend those extra 2 hours really like lining things up and cutting things accurate, you'll get a way better result. And like, if you're doing it for fun because you enjoy it, like I think that you'll get more out of it. You're just spending more time on your hobby and getting a better result.
Yeah. And one other thing I think is a strong move whenever you're doing limited tool projects is finding ways of lining things up and making sure that they're square, that aren't expensive jigs or weird clamps.
Yeah. So
whether it's, go ahead. Yeah, exactly.
I was gonna say, so that was something I thought about. So while I was doing it, I was using these woodpecker corner clamps that I have, but I was like, you know, most beginners are obviously not going to have these. So yeah. Let me show other ways. So with everything that I did, I tried to show multiple ways to do it. So awesome. I just showed how you can just get a block of wood and clamp one clamp to it and then clamp another clamp to it on the other side so that they're perpendicular from each other. And that'll work to do the same thing. And like really what you're, the main thing you're using it for is almost like an extra set of hands. And
totally.
Then, and then also showing how like use your vertical partitions as spacers when you're building this up so that you can get equal space things. So it's just a lot of like little things that don't even really require anything extra. They just require a little bit more time.
That's awesome. Yeah, because those are the same people that are going to be receptive to those types of tips are the same people that are going to be doing limited tool projects. So I think you're right on board. That's awesome.
I'm glad you're doing projects like that and thinking about it that way. I had a comment this weekend, which led to a little bit of a flame war in the comment sections of my Instagram account.
Yeah.
Where this random idiot posted something that was saying like, oh, all the projects from Makers look the same. And he didn't phrase it very well. So I said, huh, I don't know who you follow, but I follow a lot of people whose work all seems dramatically different. And then he said he listed a bunch of people. So the three of us, Bob from I Like to Make Stuff. And then he made this really sexist part of it, which is, and all the women makers, you know, April.
Because they, like, they all make the same things.
And he listed like April, Laura Kampf, Get Hands Dirty.
Right.
And I may be missing, forgetting one. And I was like, are you kidding? Like, I haven't welded any bicycle mods. Bob's right. over there, like, making pottery wheels, which is fantastic. Shout out to Bob. The pottery wheel thing, that
yeah.
awesome project. But then he's also doing stuff like, you can't say things all look the same when Mike creates a piece of furniture, Chris creates this incredible Live Edge console, Bob's 3D printing a head that soap comes out of the nose, Laura's modifying bicycles into beer care. Like, it's just incredibly untrue. But then he and you know, so I sort of responded saying, huh, well, I can see how you might think that if you aren't looking at how things are made or the process, you're just looking at thumbnails as end products, then yeah, you might see a lot of furniture. But I find that the more I learn about cooking, the more I can taste differences. So I was saying that your observation is probably confined by your limited knowledge and that there's more enjoyment as you learn. And this is why learning isn't this thing that's the opposite of fun. It increases your enjoyment. When you learn more about, you know, wine or something like that, you enjoy it more. So the way you're talking about it, this isn't just a set of shelves or things like that. You're thinking about how you can make it so that a person in a specific circumstance can relate and achieve it. And yeah. that two things can look, not that our stuff looks similar, probably of me and Mike's stuff looks the most similar, I would say, or we have projects that yeah. are, we have like variables or certain projects that neither one of us would do that the other one does. But there is some like, there's a big middle part of the Venn diagram.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah. Yep.
But we all favor different techniques and have different biases that inform the way we build things. And that makes it sort of accessible and achievable for different people. But when you expand the group to that broad, so anyways, if you want to read a pretty entertaining flame war. And so my strategy with trolls is one, Essie was telling me about an interview she read where it was a psychologist sort of saying that most internet trolls actually classify or can be classified as sadists. They're people that actually get some sort of pleasure out of trying to just randomly hurt people anonymously. Like they actually get like a little endorphin rush in their brain. So,
ooh, I'm being bad.
My response.
Like, ooh, I'm so bad.
Yeah. I think of it more as like, they're people that are ignored and they feel like no one pays attention to them. And the only yeah. time they can get attention is through negativity because they lack the work ethic and creativity to achieve that positively.
And then that creates a feedback loop that is right. not good.
Cool. And so my strategy is either to ignore and delete because it's my channel, my rules. Or if I am going to respond, I try to take the Marie Kondo approach where I only respond if I'm going to get a spark of joy out of it. Meaning like I'm ready to start the roast.
Yeah.
So I started going back at him and made a point that I think his ignorance is contributing to his boredom, because he was saying how bored he is with all the maker community. And then I kind of shouted him out on Instagram stories, which kind of brought more attention to that post. And then everyone started roasting him, and not in a mean way, but just not letting him have the last word. And he got to the point where he started saying really ridiculous things like, all this stuff is factually uncreative.
Right.
Yes.
Fact. This
right,
is
fact. And I was like, well, I don't think you know what a fact is, but
let's roll with that. No.
But
I did like his point. The one that stood out that made me laugh was basically saying, like, he's subscribed to you, and so that basically makes him your boss.
Your boss. Oh.
Yeah. And so that one had me laughing. You're I was like, damn, dude, me. You've got a lot of bosses.
Yes.
For being self-employed, you've got a lot of bosses.
Yeah. When he said, I am here to... He said that we're all here to amuse him and our followers, and that we work for them. And I was like, no, I appreciate my followers. I like
we have
abuse,
a good mutual relationship.
But
right?
I don't yeah. take a paycheck from my followers. I don't work for them. If I work for someone, they have the ability to fire me. A follower has the ability to unfollow, but they don't have the ability to end my employment. They can only end like 1/1,000,000th of it. Not to brag, but yeah, it was fun. And then the whole community kind of like piled on. But again, I what I liked too, that wasn't mean. It wasn't like they were making personal attacks. They were just, everyone was just kind of making jokes about him and what the ridiculousness of what he was saying, and calmly kind of just letting him seem like he's in his own ridiculous little corner. So that felt nice. And it actually blew the post up too, because it ended up creating another that one thread had like 100 comments on it. So it kind of helped promote the post.
Well, I got to say, you know, as a subscriber of yours, Ben, I'm going to bring it up at our next board meeting. And I think you deserve a raise.
Thank you.
Wow. Congrats. Yeah. Wow.
Well, congrats. We'll see what happens. We'll see what the rest of them say.
Jesse was saying like, oh, what did Jesse say? It's like, oh, I'm still waiting for my weekly performance review. So when you can send that out, that'd be great. Yeah.
You didn't sign your FTP reports.
But the point is that it's not just end product, right? Like it's interesting to learn the different ways that it's made with different tools. That's what I always liked about Anthony Bourdain's cooking and travel shows, is that he wasn't just showing here's finished cuisine from the point of view of someone sitting at the table. He's showing the tools, the culture, the farming, the agriculture, all those things that influence it, which explain why there's all these little differences in cuisine around the world, even if sometimes it looks relatively similar. Like, can you imagine someone that thinks a steak from Denny's is just the same steak as something from like Peter Luger? Like,
what's the difference?
Right. Like, if you don't get that nuance, like, that's not about you having a responsibility to be educated. No one cares. But you're missing out on so much enjoyment if you can't discern those subtle differences that aren't actually that subtle.
Right. Can I just say Denny's steaks are the best steaks around? Just put that on the record.
Yeah, we used them to patch up some holes in the bus, and they were fantastic.
Yeah. They work so well. You think he writes strongly worded letters to Honda, and he's like, 4 wheels and 2 headlights in the front again? Come on.
I know.
Put some original ideas.
Well... It was funny. It made me think about, I think there is a certain part of the internet that just wants to see dramatically different stuff. And I think that's why people think of the internet as a race to the bottom sometimes. They think of the internet as a place without nuance. So I was thinking about whenever there's a holiday, I don't do holiday projects. But whenever there is a holiday, I think about what I would have done if there was a holiday, if I did do that kind of trash.
Project.
No, just kidding.
Shout I don't out to actually all you. Do it,
I
but
think
I
about
go
what
through
I'll
the
do
thought
next
process.
Year.
Right. Kind of like to think, what would be my idea that would do the best? And if I was going to do something for Easter, I think I would have taken, you know, those like terrible candies, the marshmallow peeps.
Yeah. I've never eaten one, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
They basically are a marshmallow candy that looks like if an emoji was edible, it would be a peep.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So I was
they
like,
must make poop emoji peeps.
So in thinking of what would be like my certified banger. Yeah. How are those stickers coming, by the way?
Yeah.
Chris?
So far, not so good. Okay. I'll get so on it.
If I was going to do an Easter certified banger video and I would take one of those marshmallow peeps, I would get a plastic like toy egg and I would embed a peep in a perfectly clear epoxy egg.
Epoxy egg, yeah.
And then use it as a Christmas ornament.
I'd do some kind of thing where like Jesus comes out of something using a TV lift. Let's do it. Next year we're doing it. That's the upcoming challenge, the Easter challenge.
All right, we'll do that next year. We'll do the Easter. We'll all come up with our best.
You better start
Easter.
Brainstorming, Mike.
All right, yeah. But I'm not going to give you all any hints once I come up with it. I'm going to come out with a certified banger.
The bag too early.
Yeah, I'm going to come out with a certified banger completely unannounced.
Nice.
All right. Well, speaking of certified bangers, I want to hear what you guys have been recently exposed to, whether it's a TV show, a new product. What are you guys currently obsessed with?
I got a real quick one. So this is not a new product, but something that I never used before and was just like randomly on Amazon. I'm like, I'm going to buy a shoehorn. Things
oh,
are
gosh.
Game changer.
Get out of here, Chris. No,
dude,
it is not.
You gotta
a game
get a shoehorn.
It just lets you put shoes on without bending over. That's not a game changer.
No, without like ruining the back. I was like crushing the back of my shoes every time trying to put my foot in there. These things, man, just slides in like butter.
You don't untie your shoes, do you?
I don't.
Exactly. See, that's
what
it is.
I'm a shoehorn man.
You want to talk about a game changer? It's called untying your shoes when you take them off and put them on. The real game changer.
I don't have that much foresight.
All right. Well, I'm on your same boat. I don't untie my shoes either, so maybe I should look into it.
Yeah, I'm going to buy you a shoehorn for Easter next year.
Awesome. Okay, that's a solid one. I'm waiting for that video. I'm waiting for the bent laminated shoehorn.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, you could like make a cool little form for it and everything.
I like
it. I'm going to give a shout out to a channel. It's called Fully Charged. Actually, it's Fully Charged Show, but they do car reviews on electric vehicles. I think that's the 99% of their content. And this week, I saw a video on the Honda E prototype. So if you just kind of search Honda E prototype Fully Charged, you'll find it. But Honda's come out with a new little electric vehicle. And as small and compact as it is, which is kind of leaning towards something that I wouldn't buy just because I've got to fit plywood in something, I think it makes up for it. It's kind of got a little bit of Mini Cooper mixed with a little bit of futuristic,
I like the
blacked out LED kind of thing happening. It is pretty cool. It is. It's pretty neat for what it is.
I like how you spelled it out, Honda and then E. Like somebody would have thought it was like, oh, it's not a Honda. It's just like kind of like a Honda. It's Honda E. Honda.
I tried my best to like Honda, the letter E prototype. That's what I should have said. But yeah, it's pretty cool. But mostly for the channel, they've got a bunch of videos, all of them kind of around electric vehicles. And they do a good job of kind of doing the, what's that show that was on BBC where they would
Top Gear?
Yeah, Top Gear. They don't quite have as cool of performance tests, but they do a good job of running through the vehicle, similar to like what Top Gear used to do back in the day. So if you're interested, check it out. I think you'll dig it.
Nice.
So for my obsession is with Conway Electric, which I think I've mentioned them before, but they just sent me a bunch of stuff for the Container House and for that spam email project that I've been working on kind of on the back burner.
Yep.
And I don't know a ton about electrical stuff. So when I first saw this product, its appeal to me was primarily aesthetic. It had this kind of cool retro vibe and great color combinations. And it basically makes an extension cord that looks good enough to be home decor. And that idea to me is amazing because we all need plugs in different places. Like we need them, you know, the homes were designed to have stationary floor-mounted or electrical appliances that were sitting on top of tables and stuff. They didn't anticipate that we'd have these tiny pocket-sized devices that we need to recharge constantly.
Right.
So having a beautiful cloth cord with a cast aluminum powder-coated receptacle at the end allows you to sort of bring a really nice-looking plug wherever you sort of need it in a way that isn't, that's complementary to the decor of your interior environment. That was all cool. I thought, great, they look great. They're on their expensive side. And well, I met with the founder of them, that company, this weekend, and we just had a great conversation. I was saying, like, well, you know, what makes your product this price point? And hearing him sort of explain in detail, like, all the things that they do was pretty impressive. So again, it was something where my limited information about this was not allowing me to see the difference. And I was just looking at the what it looked like on in an image, not in person. Once I held it in person, I said, oh, wait, there's no exposed screw heads. There's only these like hand milled brass plugs. Oh, wow. This isn't a plastic body or a galvanized steel body. This was like custom aluminum, and there's no, it's perfectly smooth on the outside and powder coated.
Yeah.
And once you see that level of detail in person, it was very much like a, you know, if you're familiar with the company Shinola, that makes really nice sort of stuff. It's like that level of craftsmanship. So one, it was, you know, seeing those differences up close, but then also hearing what the optimal way to charge a smartphone is? Other than plugging it in?
No. A Four Eyes wireless night.
Well, Mike, you almost always have no battery, right?
Yeah, I pretty much live at 12%.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that might be contributing to that is that you've been charging your phone wrong. So most chargers, when you plug them in, it sends a consistent amount of current into the phone. But your phone battery, if it's not warm and you just sort of plug in too much current, it can actually create little tiny crystals within the lithium ion battery, which then decrease the performance of the phone or of the phone's battery over time.
Oh, okay. Before you go on, I've kind of heard something similar. So in my car, I've got one of those like fast chargers, I think is what they call them, to where it just like charges it like four times faster than a normal outlet. So that's probably even doing it worse.
Well, it depends on if it's a fast but smart charger.
Probably not, because I got it on eBay or Amazon, one or the other.
It still might
that's
be.
Smart.
But the best chargers, they start with a trickle for a few seconds that allows the battery to warm up. And then once the battery's warmed up, it can take more flow faster. So it's almost like there's like a viscosity of a fluid flowing into something. Whereas you warm it up, then you can get more in quicker. So if you don't force charge it by putting too much into a cold battery, you don't create those little crystals and detract it from the device.
It's like foreplay.
Yeah.
Just go jamming that charger right in there.
Chris, come in with the heat, dude. Nice.
Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome. That could be their new slogan. Chris, like foreplay for your iPhone.
Just gonna warm it up.
Just give a little kiss on the neck before you go plugging that phone in.
But it was one of those times where, like, learning something makes you appreciate it more. I think we're going to be working with them. I've been looking for a electrical company to partner with, because that's not an area of expertise I have a great deal of knowledge in, and I would like to develop more lighting projects. So they should be a fun partner for that. So shout out to Conway Electric. They have a pretty good Instagram feed with some nice content.
Yeah. It's funny, even though Conway Electric is a brand that they don't have an incredibly huge product category or product catalog. Mm-hmm. And so their Instagram feed, you know, it's not the same product over and over again, but the same products do make repeat appearances, but everything is shot so crisp and clean that it does not bother me at all. Like, they do a great job of staging and doing those really crisp product shots as well that, yeah, I'm not bothered by their Instagram feed whatsoever.
One bit. Oh, no. I thought you were going to say one bit. I was going to try to jinx you.
Speaking of Instagram feeds, if you're interested in following us individually, you can find us at Four Eyes Furniture. That is Chris. At Benjamin Ueda. That is Ben. And at Modern Builds, which is me. Collectively, we are at Modern Maker Podcast. That account doesn't get posted to an absurd amount. It gets posted to a lot whenever we do challenges, which is something that we're working on the next one.
Yes.
So make sure and follow that so you can keep updated anytime we have useful information. Aside from that, if you're interested, in giving us a podcast review. We would appreciate that on the iTunes app. It just lets that app know that we're a good show and that it should suggest us to people that like similar content. Finally, if you're not already, you know what? I was going to say if you're not already, but I ran through the list already.
You already did. All right. If you're not already, listen to another episode.
Yeah, if you haven't listened from episode one, go back and do that. We'll see you next week on the Modern Maker Podcast. Bye, everybody.
Bye.